Welcome to the Art of Success podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Buzinski, and I'm excited to be interviewing personalities from all different backgrounds on how they've learned and earned success. Our goal is that the stories would equip you to achieve success both personally and professionally. Please note that there may be explicit words or conversational topics in this podcast. So if you're underage or listening with a child, please be aware of this. Lastly, please note that all the views, beliefs, and opinions are not always a reflection of the hosts. Okay, let's jump in. Eric Cooperman, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I've been really excited to be connecting with you. I think your story is so unique. The things that you're doing in advertising and in marketing and media are really remarkable. The brand that you've built, oh my gosh, I want to get into it. So let's just start off with a little bit about yourself. You know, everyone tuning in, they don't know anything about you. What are some things about your story? Kind of catch us up from birth to now.
Sure. Well, I'm a Scorpio. I was born on November 14th, 1986. It was a Friday. Now, I won't go that far back. Born in LA, moved to Ojai, a small town by Santa Barbara when I was six, went to this awesome but very well called hippie school, so to speak, called Oak Grove School, that was very alternative way of education, but I really value it a lot, and went there through first grade through high school, and then about, how long ago was it? So when I was 17, went to Arizona, U of A for school and college. And then after college, decided I wanted to live in Santa Monica. Didn't know what I'd do, but wanted to live out here.
So you moved to Santa Monica, and tell us a little bit about professionally what you've done, because I think you've accomplished some really cool things in a short amount of time. And you've also done that alongside a bunch of other passions that you have personally. So maybe talk about that.
Sure. So graduated 2008. I had built a storm drain filtering business the junior year summer in college with a friend, and then realized I didn't want to filter storm drains for the rest of my life and left him the business. Built it to be a multi-million-dollar business. So it was a fun experience. Got out, went into commercial real estate, and started one week to the day before the entire banking industry collapsed. And that was not a good time to be in commercial real estate. I was amazing. Made money when buildings sold. And not only were buildings not selling, nobody was making any offers on them. So I spent a year in that, made $350 that year, which is—
What? Cool. Yeah. That's a ball buster, man. Like that was a tough year.
Santa Monica is not a cheap place. It was an interesting experience in going into debt.
Give people context, because not everybody understands. So Santa Monica first is one of my favorite places in the world. If you haven't been there, the experience, the energy, the people, the culture, there's something about it that, I mean, I call it, it's slightly spiritual, but more importantly, it's a little bit like heaven in the sense that the streets are paved with gold. If you want an apartment there, what's the cost?
Right now, I think it's an average one bedroom apartment is $3,600 a month.
And what would that be if you wanted to buy it?
You want to buy a condo out here, it's probably starting around 1.2 million is like a smaller beat up condo.
It's so crazy. It's like, and they are beat up. Like that's the reality. So that's a little bit of context for Santa Monica, let alone the commercial real estate in Santa Monica and how involved I feel like the local government is there. They don't make things easy, right?
Yep. No, they're. I actually just moved our business this week out of Santa Monica because after trying to work with them for a long time, I just gave up.
Well, I don't think you're the only one. I think you've got to really have a Santa Monica love to stay there long term with your business.
It's still one of the most beautiful places to live. So my place is still in Santa Monica, but our office is now just over the border.
So cool. So talk to us about this new office. Tell them a little bit about Hawk Media. And a little bit of your take on the philosophy of when it started and how you've scaled so fast and you're working with these top brands, right? I think it's remarkable. And I think there's a little bit of the value proposition that you bring as well as the values of your company that have elevated you very quickly.
Yeah. So just quick, what got us here after the real estate thing, I ended up 6 months in, started working on an online music company, built that for 2 years, hired a CEO to take over because I realized it wasn't going to be massive, but it was profitable, and then built and sold to e-commerce fashion companies. And so that puts me to 5.5 years ago. I left the last company and was advising and consulting for a lot of large and small brands on how to drive revenue growth using marketing, because I had built and sold two e-com companies. I had some credibility in LA and people wanted to know what I knew.
And so, now did you do good with those companies?
Did I do good?
Did you do well when you sold those?
First one paid off all the debt for 5 years of building companies. The second one I did not, because it was owned by an incubator. Their deal with me was not exactly what we had discussed, but by the time the contract got done, I was already too deep that I was like, all right, and I knew what was coming. But
you had to get out. But was the learning worth it? That's the question, right?
I don't regret this path at all.
We need to get back to that, but keep going. I want to come back to that if I forget, because there's a story there that I think people need to hear.
Yeah, totally. But no, I ended up, I hadn't put some money away, so I didn't necessarily have to work hard for a little while. I had a little bit of cushion. I also just traditionally don't spend a lot of money. I just got really excited because I bought a new car and it's way cheaper than my last one. so it's still a fun car. But and I actually stood on stage recently making fun of a bunch of people that drive Ferraris to show off their wealth. Like, that's literally the cost of a minimum wage employee. Like,
so
I have 150 employees make minimum wage. So that doesn't impress me. And I didn't realize that like several people in the audience drove Ferraris. It's pretty funny.
Oh no, what happened?
a bunch of other people said, I can't believe you called them out. And I was like, I didn't know I was calling anyone out. I just thought that it was a general asshole move. I don't mean to drive a Ferrari, to be clear. I actually think Ferraris are awesome. I mean to like post it on your Instagram, like your, and tell people you can teach them how to make money.
No, that thing you just mentioned right there. So if anyone's listening, you drive a Ferrari or a Lamborghini or a Rolls Royce or a Bentley, whatever. It's like, it's not about that. It's it's about the positioning of that. My God, if I see one more of those Instagrams, I actually block those every single time.
Oh, yeah.
Cause I'm like, stop. You're like, that's not helping people like that. Tell someone that's working at a job or a minimum wage job that they can make 36 grand a year or 50 grand a year. Don't tell them that in 6 months, they'll be making 2 million. Now, could they? Go ahead.
They could make millions. But the funny thing is, like, I mean, sincerely, it costs me twice as much to have an assistant as it does to have a Ferrari. So it's like, how about I start posting pictures of my assistant and be like, you could have one of these.
Like, that's
more baller than a Ferrari. It's just, it's a ridiculous thing.
Bro, what you just said, though, is the coolest way I've ever heard it said. Please keep going.
Yeah. Got to that point. I was advising and consulting, and then I kept seeing that there's a huge pain point still in the market when it comes to marketing. And what it is when it comes time to execute on these things, there's two options. You hire a team in-house or hire an agency. And what I found was hiring in-house generally isn't cost effective. That's if you can find and attract actual talent in marketing, which is maybe 5% of the marketers out there actually know what they're doing. And that's actual marketers. And then
we're talking marketers, not people that can create graphics and post on social media, people that drive results and hit objectives.
And it's such a low barrier to entry to say you're a marketer. If you have a Facebook page, people try to say they're a marketer now. So it's like, it's an issue. And then even if you solve those two problems, then you're operating in a vacuum, and that's been like the reason that giant consultancies and giant agencies exist is because that's a bad thing to do. And almost every Fortune 500 understands that. That's why they work with vendors. A lot of businesses try to do it themselves. And what we've seen is about 90% of them see steep declines after 6 to 9 months because they don't know what's going on in the market. So that's why agencies exist.
Because it's not their core business is what you're saying. What you're saying is outsource everything. That's what you're saying.
Yeah. No, for obviously cost effectively, but there's certain things that you don't need outside expertise to manage at some points. And you auditing, you outsource. Bookkeeping, it depends on the stage of the company, but you can probably find a bookkeeper. It depends on the task, but
I outsourced my bookkeeping right now, and it's where we're at now in the next year and a half or two. Will we want to actually have a more pulse check on everything at all times? Yeah, probably. But no, I save so much money, bro. My accountant's amazing. It's like $250 a month. He does everything.
Yeah. Exactly. And so there's ways to do both. And even on a marketing level, there's certain things you want in-house and certain things you should hire people for. And what we always say is, if it's something you need someone full-time and low expertise for, bring it in-house. You're not worried about who it is. If it's something you need high-level expertise for, then look to outsource it, because you want people that specialize. And there's this reality check we have to give some people sometimes, where it's like, you really think that you can hire the best Facebook marketer if I'm up against you in hiring? Like, do you think your business is that sexy that if you and I are sitting in a room and with what I've built here and what we have to attract people, you can hire a better person than I can? I also know how to vet them better. I also have a ton of peers for them to be vetted by and trained by, managed by. Like, it's like, it's just, you're never going to have the same quality of Facebook marketer I can. Like, it's right. You can 0.1% chance of nailing that. So if you want to take that risk, sure, go for it. But it doesn't seem very pragmatic. So
yeah, I agree with that.
Agencies exist. The problem is, it's become sexy to build an agency. And so 99% of them are now full of shit.
It's so, Look, I'm going to say, so two things. Full disclosure on the accountant thing, I don't pay $250 a month. I don't want people that know my accountant feeling like that he's giving me some special deal. Second thing is on the thing that you just mentioned right there. Look, that point you just nailed is it's inarguable though, right? Like, how do you argue that? Like, yeah. I spent 30, 40 grand with a marketing company that was not a marketing company. They just said they were a marketing company. And they did nothing for me, man. Like literally, like when I look back, a little bit of my immaturity showed in that because I'm like, I should have cut the relationship long ago because with the money I spent with them, my God, that like there was just nothing there. So the fact that you have proven results. So what's the secret sauce, right? Because at the end of the day, people can spend money with you, but the only way you retain customers is if you serve them by hitting the things that they want. How are you doing that?
Yeah, and so just to finish, the last option here for people is to hire a giant agency that costs millions of dollars, makes you sign long-term contracts, locks you up, high barriers to entry. They won't take any budgets under, you know, 150 grand a month. This is very standard in the better agencies. And so that's what started this. We basically, I was sick of it, decided to hire my own SWAT team because I was on the other side. I had brands of my own that I was sick of this too. And so I hired seven people, each with their own expertise, like a Facebook marketer, an email marketer, a web designer, a fractional CMO, and went to these brands and said, hey, everything's a la carte, month to month, cheaper than hiring in-house. But the idea is now you can spin up the team that you need now and then pivot and change as you need to, which is very common in marketing. And so I had enough credibility that they knew I knew what I was doing. The people I hired were very talented people because I knew how to vet them. And
not,
so now,
not, not that it matters, but how do you tier your pricing? Is it monthly and there's some type of hourly that you're getting? And if you go under that, you still pay it. But if you go over that, you pay a little bit more that month or?
No, we don't count hours. I mean, we count hours for like from a management perspective, but we kind of let it be a pendulum swing where sometimes a company will need a lot of hours and sometimes they won't. And that's how this goes. The only time is like when people are being obnoxious about it and like, I want to be on the phone with you every day for 2 hours and they're paying for an eighth of someone's time. That's when we're like, okay, you know, no, because then they have no time to do any work for you. But if it's sometimes it'll be a really busy week and they need extra help, that's okay. So we're more flexible than that. And that's part of our culture here. And that's how we started. You know, we went back to these companies and started working and we started hiring and the company's completely bootstrapped, no debt. But, you know, over the past 5 years, we've grown it to over 150 people. And really what it was focused on was we've had three core principles for the past 5 years that we've stuck to, which is get shit done, because execution is really what matters in marketing. We actually talk about it, like shipping a product at 90% versus waiting to get it to 100% is way more valuable. Like get it done. Doesn't have to be perfect in marketing. It really doesn't. And we try to educate.
But it has to get done so you can actually measure the results, right?
Yeah, exactly. And get it, like when it's the perfect example is like, let's say it takes us 2 months to build a website. We have someone that like is like, oh, I want to tweak this and I want to do that. And like they start trying to go for perfection on these little like details that no one's ever going to notice. And it takes an extra 3 months to build their website. They just lost 3 months of revenue. It's like, wow, you should have just launched it. We can make changes later. Like it's that kind of a concept that we stick to. And then it's learn quickly because our industry, so it's get shit done, learn quickly because our industry changes.
The algorithm shifting, people, the consumer demands are changing. The fact that people are, they're like wanting, keep going. You're really speaking. This is awesome.
Yeah, and the last one is be cool because we all work with each other way too often. We all are stuck in a room together and we want people that we actually want to work with. So it's like, be cool people, be empathetic. So we're shifting those right now. And a couple principles that we've always had, but we've never stated, and we're going to be adding soon to our actual like core principles. Number one, do the right thing for the right reasons. We always talk about it. We always preach it. We always talk to our clients about it. People ask why we're successful.
Yeah, I mean, you said it to me last time on the call. So it's like, keep going.
I think that is what drove our success. I think that people know by reputation, we really do the right thing for the right reasons. So like, and the concept there is like, if I had a streaming feed of every conversation and everything going on in our office without trying to give away any client data, but like our own conversations, I want anyone to be able to tune in and see how we talk in here and go, oh, fuck yeah, I would love to work with these guys.
Right.
Like it should be very easy because everything we're doing is very, you know, above board. And that is a really unusual thing in the marketing world. Everyone's trying to be sly. Everyone's trying to grab money out of people's wallets. Like,
so that's why I wanted to do this podcast with you. For everyone listening, look, there's something about you, Eric. You have a speed that is abnormal. I think you're aware of that. Yeah. But I think what's more important is you are very value-driven, right?
Yeah.
So one, it's becoming, it used to be an anomaly, but I cannot wait till if you do not have guiding values and principles that you live by as a company, you are rejected by consumers altogether. Because that very thing you just said, You know, I used to, 6 years ago, man, I was taught to keep things away from employees and team members, and it was so politically weird, and not really, but I mean, if my team listens to this, my old team, they'll really laugh. I'm still close with them, right? But it's like, I did a podcast with somebody, Dick Gephardt, who ran for president of the United States, and he said, tell everyone everything all the time. No secrets. And I was like, wow, that's a better model. But I love your values, man. Keep sharing some more of them.
Right now, you have to deal with a backlash when you're completely honest with everyone all the time. But I totally agree with that. Like, there are downsides to that that I deal with. There are downsides to lack of context, or like, I'll explain. Like, I tell everyone our numbers in our office. And they're like, wait, if we profited $1 million last year, why can't I get $100,000 bonus? And you have to fucking explain how that
works.
Wow,
that's so, that's very, okay. I like that. So what do you do then?
I tell them exactly, I show them where everything goes and why it's important to keep profitability and money in the bank, and where, how thin we've gotten even with that profitability, and like why we need
to. So you're also training people how to be amazing human beings, also future potential business owners and team members. Yeah. See what you just did there. I cannot wait to see 25 years from now what the marketplace looks like for team members that are highly educated on being a part of something bigger than themselves.
And we are building an alumni network for Hawk Media alumni, people that leave on a good note, because some of them are doing really cool stuff. A lot of our people leave here after a few years to become heads of marketing at really cool brands.
I was going to say then they're ambassadors.
We have a former employee that's great, that is building a company that, frankly, I told him I didn't agree with. Like, I just didn't see it, and because he offered me to invest, be a partner, I was like, I trust you. I don't see this, so I wouldn't invest, but I'm here to support. And the guy's crushing it. He started a company called Greenbox Robotics, and it's a robotic machine to help with inventory management and sales at cannabis, what do you call them?
Dispensaries.
Dispensaries, thank you. Because they deal with a lot of problems with the lines that form, et cetera. So it's literally a robot that handles everything.
No way.
And I didn't get it, because I'm like, if I'm going into a dispensary, I'll just buy the stuff. Or if I'm sitting at home and don't want to deal with someone, I'll just order it. Like, you can get it delivered. And I don't smoke, though. So I was like, I'm not that guy. But if this is something you're passionate about, go for it. And you do have a job back here, because he was leaving on a very good note. He handled it well. He's been awesome. And so
let's talk about that. How do you handle when good people leave? How do you handle when bad people leave? Because this is the fact. Yeah. When you deeply care about people, whether it's good or bad, it's like losing a family member in a sense. It's sad, but at the same time, it's also inspiring to know that you can launch people. So talk to me a little bit about that for you.
So it goes two ways. So when they're really good about it, this is not a slave ship. I don't expect people to be here forever if they don't want to be. I hope that I can make a place where people want to stay here. I hope we've even incubated companies out of here and helped. Like, I hope that we can build a really good environment that people want to stay. But I also understand that, as the company gets bigger, there's not necessarily going to, the people that want to move up and are ambitious, there's not always going to be a place for them to be ambitious here. Like, there's people that are going to grow really fast, and we may not have an open position that allows them to move up. And that's just the reality. It's not something I don't like that, but there's nothing really to do about it. So,
well, and it's not personal. That's why there's nothing. That's why it doesn't hurt. It's just you are accelerating people. And if people are around greatness within you, greatness rises up in them. And then they sometimes want to go do something with it.
Yeah, exactly. And so I am not. So it does. I definitely don't take it personally. And then if they leave on a good note, they like transition their clients really well, or they're in sales and they transition their leads and they speak positively and they give ample notice and they don't leave a bunch of shit on our plate when they get out of here. And we're not scrambling and we don't open up a can of worms when we like log into their stuff and go, what the hell has been going on? Like, if they don't fully check out before leaving and like just screw us over, then
that's a different conversation.
I'm totally happy for them. Those are the things that like when someone leaves here and it's like, oh, what the fuck have you been doing? Like, we have both happen. And when that happens, that's when like, frankly, they're not going to get an invite to the alumni program that we're building. Cause I have the same dream of this as you do, if you mentioned, which is 25 years from now, I want to have a network of people that have come here. Kind of like, it's not new. We're not reinventing the wheel. Bain, McKinsey, BCG, they all have this. And their networks
are... It's a community of ambassadors that are basically... They're Hawk Media, fans, and raving fans and influencers, brand ambassadors. I mean, it's like... And all the more, to me... with how the workforce is changing as well. And to your point, like, hey, if I want to hire a graphic designer, It's how much is it going to be per month or a year? And it's like, maybe the Hawk meet, right? It's going to really start moving towards that, you know? And the other thought I was going to ask you about this freelancing, right? So you've got this freelance idea as well. The only problem that I would probably say with the freelancing thing is you don't, there's the execution piece is sometimes missing because it's subjective to some individual personality, right?
Yeah.
As well as the ability for them to deliver and find them when you need them, where something like Hawk Media, you have this, those are just, I mean, do you have to overcome a lot of that with people saying, well, I'll just hire someone off Upwork or freelance.com?
Yeah. And they can come, you know, look at what we've built here now and what, how we're working. Like, the nice thing is we're aspirational to a lot of companies we work with now. And it's like, we've done that. The way our model works, it's kind of speaks for itself. We're on month to month contracts, and we now are in a 27,000 square foot custom facility with 150 employees. Like, there's something there that's like, yeah, sure, go with Upwork. If that's your dream of your business and how you want to run your business, go get, you know, mediocre talent and run a mediocre business. If that's, and by the way, there are people that that's what they want, and that's acceptable. Like,
yeah,
if that's what they want for themselves. We, you know, there's kind of, people always ask, what are the criteria of your customers? Because our fees started $2,000 a month. We're no, like, the barrier is really low. And so it's like, what, it's not an indicator of their industry, their type of business. It's, are they collaborative? And do they want to grow the shit out of their business? Because if they're not ambitious and they're not collaborative, you know, my partner loves to say, we get hired for three reasons. People need bandwidth, they need expertise, or they need a punching bag. I don't want to be a punching bag.
Yeah, that's good. Man, you've got so many things going through my mind right now. So first thing, let's get into what $2,000 a month gives somebody. Let's also get into growth. Because what I want to understand is, because I don't want to forget this question, is what placed Hawk Media on the map? What was the clicker? What was the golden ticket? There's no such thing as a golden ticket, but what I'm saying is what was the thing that started to really click and you were like, wow, this is moving? So let's first start with, what does 2G get you a month if you're a company?
Yeah, that's just our minimum fee on managing advertising. So Facebook ads or Google ads, it gets you an advertising manager to start managing your ads.
Yep. And then that's like, you're creating funnels. I mean, I guess explain it, because you mentioned
it's literally like being like creating your, let's say if it's Facebook, we're actually designing the ads, writing the copy, managing through Facebook your advertising. We're not building your website. We're not managing funnels. We're building advertising funnels, like retargeting, things like that. But that's just a Facebook expert, because our whole theory here that's worked is we want vertical expertise. We want someone that just does Facebook all day, just does search all day, just, you know, just focuses.
And are there times when you're looking and talking to clients, and I'm sure that you walk them through a process of understanding their business model, who their ideal client profile is, understanding, right, the age group,
yeah,
and then like how to move it to close, right? Because marketing is the lifeblood of company, because the biggest issue is exposure, right? Once you really start going. So, I guess talk to us a little bit about that. How do you help companies with people that are sitting there saying, I just want to grow. Everything's in place. I'm ready. Eric, what do we do?
Yeah. First thing we do is dive into what the product is, service is, what they've already done. Because, you know, a company, unless a founder is like funded, or sometimes a founder needs to do a little bit. If they're bootstrapping or something, they need to do a little bit to build their own business before they come to us. Because they shouldn't be hiring anyone. Like, if you're the founder, I was told this about my own business, that I was gonna be the main sales driver for my business for 2 to 3 years. And it was 3.5 years before I actually wasn't. I was 85% of our new business generation 3.5 years into this business. So like, for to go hire someone and be like, okay, you just sell my shit. It's like, no one's as passionate. No one knows it through and through as much as you. Like, that's just always gonna be the case with the founder. So you gotta be careful about like, I have this, I'm ready to grow, you do it. That's what I mean by collaborative. It's we in it together, but we're happy to coach and then help and take over certain tasks and then start to build it. But before traction and before getting to the market,
Do you think you need? Months of a commitment? Six months.
Yeah, you need 6 before you're seeing any kind of real traction. 3 to 4 before data comes in, 6 before there's real traction, sometimes a year before you're making money. I mean, and that's normal. Everyone talks about that. Like, oh yeah, most businesses don't make money in the first year. And then when you get into the weeds, people are like, why the hell am I not making money? It's like, well, it's a cliche for a reason. Like that is actually the case. So.
Well, here's a few thoughts around that as well. So You've got, if you're listening in for a second, I'm not pitching Eric. This is not, I mean, I'm literally just genuinely curious, but it seems like if you're going to, you need 6 months up to a year, $2,000 a month, if you want to start. But more importantly, people got to know that when you're starting to market, you got to also have a marketing budget, right? You got to, what does that look like?
Cause what we say is you want to be around $10,000 to $12,000 a month ready to spend for at least 4 or 5 months. Like, so $50,000-$60,000. You want to be around to get to be ready to deploy into marketing, because, and remember, it's not necessarily going to pay all itself back right away. That's where you want to be. And so what we try to tell businesses, like, funding can get you there, or you can get there on being scrappy to generate enough revenue to cover that. So, like, it's one or the other. But, like, if you can't, if whatever, depending on the business, I don't like speaking too generally, but most businesses, if you can get, you should be able to get them to like $20,000 a month in revenue without doing shit. Like, if it's actually something people want and need and you've got some time, you should be able to hustle and do whatever you need to do to generate $20,000 a month. That's not crazy. When I started Hawk, I was getting paid $30,000 a month for consulting fees. So you should be able to find that kind of revenue.
That's,
and I was 26
crazy.
Years old. Where?
$30K in consulting fees.
Per month, and I was 26 years old. That's what quote unquote funded the company. I had an income that I used to hire a bunch of people, because again, I didn't need to buy anything. I didn't have a high overhead for my personal life.
Wow, that is incredible. Man, I'm so, so intrigued. I really wish we had time to go back into the old story with the... So actually, let's do it. We have a little bit of time. We have 3 or 4 minutes here. So two things that I want to bring up. One, how were you targeted to get attempted kidnap in India at 17 years old? And then two, the second question that we can end on is, I want you to talk about how you went through that phase of your life that you could have really been victimized by being screwed out of some of those early deals. But how you really changed your mindset, your energy, your perspective to think, this was the learning, this was the storyboard, this was the relationship building, this was the character building that made you successful today. Those are my two thoughts.
Rapid fire, two short questions. I went to India to teach, substitute teach both music and physics when I was 17. I went to this hippie school I mentioned earlier, was founded by an Indian philosopher. He had 4 schools in India, toured around. One of the first nights there, we met some random guy that invited my two buddies and I to have dinner with his family, which we were overseas and thought that sounded amazing. But
it sounds natural too, right?
Yeah. It's like, and we've heard these stories go well. Hostel wasn't a movie yet. So we're like, this sounds amazing. I told my teacher that was with us about it. I was 17, so I wasn't a kid, but he was a giant Alaskan guy, bearded, like, you know, 6'5", 6'6", something like that, like massive guy. And he goes, well, I'm going with you. We're like, all right. So we all show up, and all of a sudden the guy doesn't look so happy. A van pulls up, a guy hits my friend on the shoulder and goes, three, you said, or four people? You said it was three, not four. And they like arguing, and we're like, whoa, what the fuck is going on? And
those are crazy moments. I can't even imagine.
Yeah, so that was that. Obviously a bigger story, but I'm trying to rush through it. And then,
but you were like totally taken off guard. Like, you probably didn't even know what to do. Like, you probably didn't even run, because it was,
we were right in the middle of a busy intersection. So we weren't like, these were two small Indian guys. So I don't know what their plan was. Cause like, I was a smaller guy in high school, but like my two friends were 6 foot and jacked. And then we had this 6'4". I don't really know what the plan is, but didn't go very well. And so we literally like, my teacher was really pissed off. We were all 17, so we were like invincible. And like, that crazy guy. And he's like, I can't believe you guys just almost did this. Like, it was a very interesting situation.
So crazy.
Yeah. And it was interesting. But, and the guy still tried to play it off. He was like, oh, sorry, we're not having dinner with my family tonight. She had to go on a last minute religious retreat.
Oh no. He's like, just admit it. You tried to steal us. You tried to kidnap us. So yeah. Tell me about the other, the victimization. Because I think someone may be listening that something. So here's let me give a little preface with it. Somebody may be listening right now that you've been through something tough. We've all been through some tough stuff. We've all been screwed before. We've all been mishandled in a relationship. We could all talk about that and make that our story for our entire life and mull over it. I've done it, and it's self-destructed seasons of my life. But thankfully, we can bounce back from these. So what is your experience? And then what is your story on how to just take what you've been through and turn it for the good?
Yeah, it's honestly, it's just, you, no one does anything to you. I mean, shit happens, but like, let's put it this way. I talked about like the incubator, like mismanaging my deal, and that's why I made no money on the sale of the last company. I also made the decision to keep working and not hardball or not leave. Like, I stayed there. I knew that I didn't have a contract. I'm not a moron. So I knew that it was going, like, it's, you know, it's just like, I can talk about like how they screwed me, or I can be like, I accepted it. It's
yeah.
Fine.
Yeah.
So
I like that a lot. Nothing happens to you, and it's because the moment you make it personal, it's actually destructive. If you don't make it personal, you can win.
Yeah, and you just you set, if you don't victimize yourself, so nothing happens to you, then you take ownership of it and you make decisions based on what you can control. You end up in a better place. Like fundamentally, that puts you in a better place because you control the things you can versus throwing your hands up and going, "Well, they screwed me."
Right.
It's like, no.
No, and because once you start telling that story becomes the story you tell everyone, and that story becomes the outcome of your situation, your scenario, your season, and sometimes even some people, their life, right? And look at no one listening should feel bad about that. Everyone's been there. But if you could take one thing for example, I think, Eric, if you would have just sat there and really allowed that to mull over and become a story, you would have missed out on the opportunity you're having right now, right? I mean, very well it could have happened.
Yep.
All right, man. Well, hey, thanks so much for taking time with us on The Art of Success. Everyone, you just listened to Eric Huberman. If you enjoyed the show, please share it with a friend or family member. Check out the social media posts on the website as well. Share that out also. And if you were interested in Hawk Media, I mean, just go check out their website. Look, I've seen a ton of websites. You've seen a ton of websites. I subscribed to their I don't know if it's weekly or whatever, monthly, their email list. It's one of the most dynamic brands. It's a very cool site, very cool user experience. And heck, if you know someone that's looking for marketing, I think it's worthwhile to see the brands they're serving, see the things that they're doing, and possibly utilize them. So, hey, thanks so much, Eric, for joining us. I hope you're more successful in life because of this episode from The Art of Success. If you haven't already, go ahead and subscribe for the future updates on other episodes released. Also, if you've enjoyed what you heard today, share The Art of Success with a friend, colleague, or family member. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you on the next episode.